You know that feeling when you have like 50 tabs open in your web browser?
Oh, yeah, constantly.
Right. And you've got music playing in the background, your phone is buzzing on the desk, and you are just trying to read one single supposedly important email.
And you just can't focus on it.
Exactly. You're physically sitting in one place, but mentally you are just scattered to the four winds. It's like, I think it was the Roman philosopher Seneca who said, "You are everywhere and therefore nowhere."
That is a great quote, and so incredibly relevant for today.
Yeah, so today we are doing a deep dive into exactly how to fix that feeling. We're pulling some really fascinating insights from the RAFT program.
Specifically, we're going to be looking at chapter 64, which is called Skillful Collectedness.
Right. And our mission today is figuring out how to build a stable platform in the mind. Because, I mean, for anyone listening right now who is just tired of feeling cognitively fragmented all the time, the solution isn't, running away to a silent mountain retreat.
No, not at all. That's not realistic for most of us.
Exactly. It's about learning to stabilize your vessel right in the middle of your daily storm.
And, that distinction is really crucial. We so often mistake the goal of mental training as this complete elimination of our daily weather. Like, we think we need to get rid of the stress, the noise, the demands.
Yeah, like trying to turn off the ocean.
Right. But the RAFT program positions skillful collectedness entirely differently. And to really understand where this fits, we kind of have to look at the overall framework first.
Okay, lay it out for us.
So RAFT is actually an acronym. It stands for Recognize, Abandon, Feel, Train. And in this particular chapter, we are situated firmly in that final stage, which is train.
Okay, so structurally speaking, at this point in the program, we've already done the groundwork. Like we've practiced recognizing our turbulent patterns, abandoning those unskillful habits that drag us down, and actually feeling our physical and emotional experience.
Exactly. And now we are actively training the mind to hold its ground. Historically, this aligns with the eighth and final factor of Gautama, the Buddha's middle way program.
Gautama, the Buddha. Okay.
Yeah, and the traditional Pali word used by Gautama is samadhi.
Samadhi. I've heard that term thrown around a lot in like yoga classes and stuff.
Right, it's very common. When it's translated into English, it's generally understood as collectedness or composure or a gathered mind. But to really grasp it, we have to strip away some modern baggage.
What kind of baggage?
Well, samadhi is not a trance state. It is not zoning out to escape your life,
Yeah.
It is the steady unification of attention. It's basically the capacity of your mind to remain stable and available rather than splintered.
Okay, let's visualize that because the difference between a scattered mind and a gathered mind can feel a bit abstract until you're actually in the thick of it.
Yeah, analogies really help here.
So imagine you were out on the ocean on a raft. The waves are chopping, the wind is howling, and that's your daily life, right? That's your deadlines, your difficult conversations, the
The
news.
daily storm.
Exactly. A scattered mind is like having a crew on that raft who are just absolutely panicking. I mean, they're running wildly from the port side to the starboard side. They're dropping the oars. They're screaming about the
Just
waves.
total chaos on deck.
Yeah. And their erratic, fragmented movement is actually threatening to capsize the boat far more than the ocean swells are.
That's such a good point. The internal fragmentation creates the true vulnerability, not necessarily the external events.
But wait, instinctively, if my mind is that crew and they are freaking out, my first reaction as the captain is to just yell at them, sit down and shut up.
Which is what we all do, right?
Yeah. Like if I am stressed about a presentation and obsessing over an argument I had yesterday, isn't the fastest way to get control just to clamp down? To just force the mind to be perfectly quiet?
I mean, it is the most common approach, absolutely, but it almost always backfires.
Really? Why?
Well, the text from the RAFT program makes this really vital mechanical distinction here. Skillful collectedness is about gathering, not suppressing.
Gathering versus suppressing. Okay.
Think about what happens biologically when you try to suppress your thoughts. You are trying to force stillness through sheer tension. You clench your jaw, you strain for silence, you try to build a dam against this massive river of anxiety.
Oh man, I can feel my shoulders tightening just thinking about that.
Exactly. Manufacturing calm through control creates this intense subsurface agitation. You actually generate a subtle hostility toward your own experience. You enter a state of internal combat.
So clamping down is essentially, it's tying the crew up in knots. They aren't rowing the raft. They're just exhausting themselves, struggling against the ropes.
That's a perfect way to look at it. Gathering, by contrast, is this patient-friendly act of returning attention over and over without that hostility.
So when your attention wanders...
And it inevitably will wander.
Right, you notice it, and you just gently regather it.
Exactly. No yelling at the crew.
I want to test that out, though. Because when we talk about gathering attention, the cultural image we usually have is this hard, narrow, laser beam stare.
Oh, like the monk on the mountain.
Yeah, like staring at a single candle flame in a dark room until the edges of your vision blur. Because realistically, maintaining that level of rigid focus in a modern office just sounds exhausting.
It sounds awful. But that image is a massive misconception. A gathered mind can actually be incredibly spacious.
Spacious? How so?
The text is very clear that collectedness does not require a white-knuckled, narrow stare. The point is not to aggressively exclude life, but simply to stop being pulled apart by every passing stimulus.
Okay, that makes sense.
Now, the early teachings do outline these things called jhanas, which are progressively deeper states of gathered attention. They move from, you know, joy and ease into this really profound, calm, and clear mindfulness.
But the RAFT program isn't treating those deep absorbed states as like a mandatory performance goal, right?
No, not at all. It's not a competition to see who can achieve the quietest brain.
Right. The objective is practical. It's about reducing the fragmentation just enough so that wisdom actually have a place to land. Because if you are entirely scattered, your insight is useless. You can't hold on to it.
Yes. And we can actually look at this through the lens of neuroscience to understand the mechanics of what's happening.
Oh, I love the neuroscience angle.
Yeah, so anyone who follows mindfulness research knows about the default mode network, or the DMN. It's usually painted as the villain.
Right, that's the network responsible for autobiographical memory, mental time travel, all that stuff.
Exactly. It's what lights up when you are zoning out or replaying some imaginary argument in the shower. And for years, the popular narrative was that a wandering mind is an unhappy mind, so we have to shut the DMN down.
But the RAFT program reframes this entirely, doesn't it?
Yeah.
The DMN isn't a glitch in our hardware. It's a feature.
Absolutely. It's crucial for imagination, for planning our futures, and for making meaning out of our pasts.
So the issue isn't the DMN itself. The issue is a lack of coordination.
Spot on. The real breakthrough in this chapter is viewing collectedness as dynamic cooperation within the brain.
How does that work in practice?
Well, when you practice gathered attention, you are engaging a continuous cycle. So your mind wanders into a future scenario that is the DMN functioning normally.
Okay.
Then you recognize the drift that is your salience network kicking in. It detects what is actually relevant in the present moment. And finally, you shift your focus back to the present, and that is your executive control network redirecting your cognitive resources.
Wow. So skillful collectedness is really just improving the communication between these three networks.
Exactly. You aren't silencing the self. You are building a more balanced, cooperative brain.
Okay. So biologically, we have these brain networks trying to coordinate. But realistically, if my mind is already in a state of panic or, I don't know, guilt about something, I can't just command my salience network to communicate perfectly.
No, you really can't.
There has to be some kind of physical or environmental starting point, right?
Yes, and you cannot build that coordination in a chaotic environment. That is why the text insists on a prerequisite concept. They call it the clean deck.
The clean?
Yeah. Before you can gather the mind, you have to examine how you are living off the cushion. The clean deck refers directly to ethical conduct.
Okay, I have to admit, when I read ethical conduct as a prerequisite for mental focus, my very first thought was that this sounds like a moral lecture.
That's a very common reaction, actually.
Right, but it's actually an architectural requirement, isn't it?
It is entirely mechanical. Think about the cognitive load of unethical behavior. If your speech or your daily actions or even the way you make a living generate secrecy or conflict or harm,
yeah.
Your nervous system is constantly scanning the horizon for threats. You are subconsciously waiting to be found out or anticipating some kind of retaliation.
So the brain's threat detection system, the amygdala, just stays highly active all the time.
Precisely. You literally can't power down into a state of gathered attention if your brain thinks there is a predator in the room. Even if that predator is just the consequence of a lie you told yesterday.
Wow. So a clean deck just means fewer disturbances in your daily life, which translates directly to less biological resistance when you actually sit down and try to steady your mind.
Exactly. It just makes the whole process easier. Now, assuming the deck is relatively clear of those major tripping hazards, the RAFT program outlines a really highly practical three-step rhythm for actually practicing this gathering.
Okay, what's the rhythm?
It is gladden, settle, gather.
Gladden, settle, gather. Let's apply this to a real scenario to see how it works mechanically.
Sure.
Say I'm sitting at my desk, and I am staring at a highly passive-aggressive email from my boss.
Oh, we've all been there.
Right. My DMN is already projecting a future where I am fired and destitute.
Mm-hmm.
I need to gather my mind before I reply to this email. How do I gladden in that exact moment without crossing into, like, toxic positivity? I mean, I can't just smile and pretend the email is wonderful.
No, and you shouldn't pretend. Gladdening the mind is not about artificial joy. It is a neurological intervention.
Okay, explain that.
When you read that email, your nervous system adopts a defensive posture. It tightens up. If you try to force focus in that state, your mind will violently resist staying in the present moment because the present feels dangerous.
That makes total sense. I want to escape the present because the present holds this terrible email.
Right. So gladdening is about making the mind hospitable. You might recall a simple moment of gratitude or acknowledge a recent kindness, or honestly, just remind yourself, right now, in this exact physical second, I am safe.
So it's essentially a hack to shift your nervous system out of that defensive crouch.
Yes, exactly. You are signaling to your awareness that it is safe enough to stay here.
Okay, so I've signaled I'm safe. What's step two?
Once the mind is gladdened and less resistant, you move to step two, settle. And this is entirely somatic. You widen your awareness into the physical body.
Like feeling the actual weight of my hips in the office chair.
Exactly. Or noticing the contact of your feet against the floor.
This serves as a counterbalance, right? Because when we panic over an email, our cognitive energy shoots upward into abstract thought.
It totally does. Grounding our awareness in physical sensations lowers that cognitive load. The body becomes a stable container, preventing the mind from just spinning out into wild hypotheticals.
Okay, I love that. So I've gladdened, I've settled, then what?
Only after you have gladdened and settled do you proceed to step three, which is gather. This is where you gently rest your attention on an anchor.
An anchor like what?
It could be the physical sensation of your breath, the ambient sounds in the room, or just the feeling of your hands resting on the keyboard.
And the RAF program offers some brilliant adjustments here, right? Because attention isn't static. It requires tuning.
It really does. If your mind is getting dull or lethargic or sleepy, you narrow your focus. Maybe you zero in on the exact temperature of the air entering your nose to kind of sharpen your clarity.
And inversely, if my mind is incredibly restless, buzzing with anxiety over that boss's email, narrowing my focus might just make me feel claustrophobic.
Yes, it can make it worse.
So instead, I widen the focus. I include the sounds of the whole office, the feeling of the whole body, giving that nervous energy more space to dissipate.
It is a continuous balancing act. You gladden, you settle, you gather. And when the mind gets hijacked by the DMN again, you don't criticize the crew. You simply repeat the rhythm.
Just over and over.
Yeah. Over time, that repeated gathering builds continuity. Your presence becomes less brittle and far more resilient.
But let's look at the friction point here. All of this practice, gladdening, settling, gathering, it's fantastic. But there's a huge gap between understanding this rhythm and actually remembering to use it when the pressure is on.
Oh, the application is always the hardest part.
Right. How do we take this off the cushion and make it function during a chaotic family dinner or like a back-to-back meeting schedule?
Well, the text is adamant that collectedness is basically useless if it remains theoretical.
Yeah.
It offers these everyday interventions designed to prevent what it calls cumulative fragmentation.
Cumulative fragmentation, like building up stress over the day.
Exactly. Typically, we just push through our day, letting stress, notifications, and minor frustrations build up hour after hour.
And by the time evening arrives, our attention is so shattered that we just collapse in front of a screen, completely depleted.
We wait for the total structural failure before we try to rebuild the platform.
Yes. So how do we stop that?
The interventions are designed to stop that accumulation. They are basically micro pauses, pausing for just 2 minutes between switching tasks.
Okay.
Feeling three deliberate breaths before responding to a difficult message, or noticing the physical sensations of your legs walking down the hallway between meetings.
I mean, those seem almost too small to matter.
They do seem small, but their function is to reset the nervous system. You're maintaining steadiness in these sustainable little doses throughout the day.
You know, it's funny. These concepts clearly don't just exist in a vacuum within this one tradition.
Mm.
When we look across modern psychology and secular philosophy, this exact mechanism of collectedness shows up everywhere, just wearing different clothes.
The secular alignments are incredibly robust. For instance, the secular Buddhist teacher Stephen Batchelor translates this factor not as concentration, but as focus.
Focus. Okay.
And he defines focus mechanically as the capacity to remain available when conditions are complex. It is the literal opposite of checking out or dissociating.
I love that definition. And we see the same architecture in Csikszentmihalyi's research on the flow state,
Oh,
right?
absolutely. Flow happens when action and awareness merge seamlessly. It requires deep engagement, but it isn't a trance state where you lose your faculties. It is immersion coupled with absolute clarity.
And modern clinical therapies lean heavily on this as well. Acceptance and commitment therapy, or ACT, is built entirely around psychological flexibility.
Right, which is the ability to stay in contact with the present moment regardless of uncomfortable thoughts.
Exactly. And dialectical behavior therapy, DBT, teaches a core skill called one mindfully.
Yes. And the mechanics behind one mindfully are just fascinating. When we try to multitask during a crisis, we split our attention.
Which spikes our autonomic arousal and our cortisol levels.
Exactly. By consciously doing one thing at a time with full attention, we are biologically signaling safety to the brain. We prove to ourselves that we have enough bandwidth to handle the present reality.
We also find this core principle in Stoicism. The text actually brings in philosophers like Epictetus and Marcus Aurelius.
Yes, the Stoics were very big on
For
this.
them, attention, what they called prosoche, wasn't just a relaxation technique. It was a rigorous, disciplined filter used to examine external impressions before allowing them to trigger a reaction.
That reframes the whole goal, really. You don't build a gathered mind so you can feel perfectly chill while the world burns around you.
Right. You build a collected mind so that when a crisis hits or someone insults you, your amygdala doesn't immediately hijack your response. You create a microsecond of space to ask, does my reaction here actually align with my guiding principles?
It's about keeping your character ready for deployment. The ultimate test of collectedness, whether viewed through the RAFT program or modern psychology or stoicism, is never how focused can I become in a quiet room?
What is it then?
It is always, does this steadiness help me reduce my reactivity, stay present with difficulty, and respond with care?
Let's bring all these threads together then. Skillful collectedness is the stable platform. It is the steady deck beneath your feet that makes all the other parts of your mental training dependable.
Yes, it's the foundation.
It is the crucial difference between having occasional fleeting flashes of insight when you are relaxed and possessing reliable wisdom that actually holds its shape under immense pressure.
And before we conclude this deep dive, it is vital we give full attribution for this framework.
Absolutely.
All of the structural insights, the analogies, and the specific rhythms we unpack today come directly from the RAFT to Freedom program. Specifically, the workbook was written by Dr. Catherine Jacob and Vince Cullen.
And they're doing some amazing work.
They really are. They are making the entire 66-chapter workbook freely available online to anyone who needs it. You can find the complete resource with a link to their website at raft2freedom.org.
It is a remarkable resource to have available. So as we wrap up, we want to leave you with something to apply directly to your life today. This is a required self-reflection straight from chapter 64.
I think this is a great
I
exercise.
want you to ask yourself this the next time you feel the pressure rising. In a difficult conversation, can I stay collected enough to hear the other person, notice my own reactivity, and choose my next words carefully?
And to anchor that reflection, I'll leave you with a quote from the end of the chapter by psychologist Daniel Goleman. Think of attention as a mental muscle that we can strengthen by a workout.
So as you step back into the reality of your day, back to the open tabs, the demanding emails, the buzzing phone, consider this. If collectedness isn't about avoiding the storm, but rather learning how to steer the raft smoothly within it, wait, no, smooth steering despite the chaos. What happens to our fear of turbulence once we truly trust our own steadiness? Does the storm itself start to look less like a threat and more like just another place to practice?